Hey, so New Zealand loves homes, houses, owning a home. We've got to the end of Luke 6. Our little series on Luke chapter 6 is coming to an end. Yes, you see? Thank you. And Jesus ends but with this incredibly famous illustration offered in response to a deadly question. And it's about home building. And I don't know, the category of houses and homes is a tough one for me. We've had some stillness, let's just animate ourselves a bit. I know some of you out there will follow, as so many New Zealanders do, one of the 5 million programs there are about houses in New Zealand. First home, my house, my castle, whatever it is. So turn to the person next to you and tell us which one is your favorite. And if you don't watch any of them, just how about, then why not? Why are you not a real New Zealander? If you don't watch any such program, tell the person next to you something that you really like about your house that you are in, all right? Okay, that's enough indulgence. So what's the best program out there? What's the one, if I were to turn on the TV or at least plug in an aerial... Read a book. Thank you. I can rely on Maureen. But come on, let's be honest. Some people. Location, location, location. Any other favorites? The block. Oh, the block. I know Attack the Block, but that's different, isn't it? Okay. You see, there's a bunch out there, right? Isn't there? Jesus is going to speak about homes. And I find it personally quite a challenge to think about homes. I mean, many of us, we live in different situations. Some of us own a home. Well, many of us, of course, are junior partners in owning the home, along with a monster bank out there somewhere. Yeah, but we own our own home. And some of us are renting, right? And we've been on a journey, our family, in respect of these things too. For a long time, we looked to one side at the desire, the thirst to own a home. To own your piece of land, which, reading New Zealand history recently, has kind of been enforced or spoken to me, this very thing that we long to have in New Zealand, a piece of territory to call our own and a building upon it in which to live. And for many years, we were in Dunedin just renting, long-term renting. And then we got to the end of this season because the house that we were in was being sold. It's one of the realities of renting. It can be sold, can't it? And just, of course, at the end of the year. And what do you do, see? So we looked around for an alternative rental and in Dunedin, or the standard of rentals is pretty shocking. It's probably worse even than it is here. Wow, finding a good rental. And we looked around and we couldn't find anything, We said, Lord, okay, we give up. And we're not going to go after this rental or that rental. We're going to go after the house that is right for the work that you have for us. So we're really asking, Lord, for a house that will be just right for our family and right for ministry, please. Because, you know, we're working for a church, lots of meetings in our home, people in our home. Please, we need a house that does that. And, you know, if it's a rental, that's fine. If it's a purchase, then make it possible, whatever. And what happened was we bought a house for the first time in our history. We bought a house. Well, we were the junior partners. ANZ, God bless them. Held the lion's share. And it was a funny thing, moving into this house. You know, we became momentarily real and settled in a way that others had never seen us as settled before. You know, we'd been there for 5 years in the same house. But when we moved into our house, the flowers came and the cards came. Because, of course, we had arrived. Very strange. But, you know, I've got to tell you, having sat to one side of all that, it was quite cool as well to own a house, even if we just owned 15% of it. You know, there was a sense of my place, you know, of stability and security and those things that are so much part of the New Zealand dream and are so intoxicating and so dangerous, actually, too. But there it was, and I thought, oh, this is kind of cool. Yes, we were saddled with the mortgage, saddled with obligations, you know, maintenance and all that kind of jazz. But there was a sense of being in a place of our own. And I'd look out at the lawn at the back, newly sown, and I'd think, I'd just like to put a tent there for the experience of having a tent there where no one can say, please move your tent, you know, because it's my place. Isn't that strange? So we owned a home for a year. And then, you see, because the thing is with home ownership, it's got to be subordinated to the will of the Lord. You see, this is the thing with all the, every element of the Kiwi dream, whichever version of it intoxicates you, right? You have to lay it down. You have to say, Lord, your will be done, your kingdom, please. Otherwise, it's just death. It all becomes death to us. So then we got a call to come north to Wellington. And so we sold our home. The Lord sold it for us, right? And now we're renting in Johnsonville. And it's a great house, actually. But I realize I've left something behind in ditching that experience of owning a home. There's an insecurity in my life again. Very strange to think on. Do we want to buy a home? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe we will someday again. Maybe not. Jesus knew the intoxications of a home. Let me put up a little bit of pornography for you. There we go. That got you, didn't it? What is that place? Anyone know what it is? Larnach Castle, that's right, yes. There it is. That's a beautiful photo, isn't it? A beautiful part of the world. And the castle is kind of a quirky thing. If you've done British castles, Scottish castles, it's more in the Scottish vein, but even then it's just not quite. Nonetheless, it is quite the homestead. And, you know, Larnach, back in the 19th century, he had money, he had power, he had influence. He had this amazing house. And, of course, how did he end his life? He committed suicide. Yeah. But let me leave that there for a moment. Jesus comes to the end of his sermon on the plain. And along the way, he's laid out some very hard teaching. He's told us in shorter terms than he does in Matthew, maybe, but still, point after point about how we are to live our lives in some of the most costly areas of discipleship, how we treat our enemies, what we do when life comes against us. Hard teachings he's given us. And then he comes to the end of the sermon. What a relief. And he says this. A question. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and you don't do what I say? Ow. And then he says, as for everyone who comes to me and hears my words and puts them into practice, right? Hear that as three steps. Very important to hear those together. I will show you what they are like. Now, the question just sits there in the air, and it's a rebuke to us and a challenge. Why do you come to me? He's talking to the crowds that have gathered, that have come to hear the great teacher Jesus. Why do you come to me and call me Lord, Lord, and don't do what I say? And the illustration, we sang about it, right? The wise man built his house upon the rock. That illustration is designed to show how idiotic it is to call Jesus Lord and then not do what he says. That's the point. So hold that in your head, and we'll spend some time with the metaphor. They are like, says Jesus, a man building a house who dug down deep and laid the foundation on rock. When a flood came, the torrent that struck that house could not shake it because it was well built. But the one who hears my words and does not put them into practice is like a man who built a house on the ground without a foundation. The moment that torrent struck that house, it collapsed and its destruction was complete. Right? There it is, very famously. Now, the version we sang was the version in Matthew, and they treat this story a little bit differently. In Matthew, there is explicit the idea that someone was building on rock and somebody else was building on sand. And that's the version we sing about. Luke doesn't so much work with the metaphor as the point. He grounds it in a point. He says the difference between the two houses is not in what was above ground, but what was below. So a slightly different point. It's not so much the rock versus sand. It's the point that rock gives you a foundation. You can actually build a house with a foundation if you're building on rock. You can't on sand. But Luke doesn't mention sand. because Jesus says, I will show you what he is like, he is offering a really precise illustration. So I want us to kind of suck the marrow from it as much as we can. Jesus has been faced in his time on the plain with those who've come crowding around him, who've drawn close to him. And they have sensed, as we've sung, of his love and his desire for them and his passion for them. Those that Jesus is speaking to are those who have come close to Jesus. And this call to build a house with a foundation that will endure is given to those who have come close to Jesus. Now, those who try to build a foundation, who try to do what Jesus said without coming to Jesus, without knowing and experiencing his love and his desire and his forgiveness and his compassion and his heart for them, will fail. Those who come are the ones that Jesus speaks to. But they are not only those who come, but they are those who hear. They have come close and they've been in the presence of Jesus, and there they have heard his word to them. There they have heard from his mouth the teachings, hard as they may be, that tell them how they must live their life. And hearing them and understanding them, listening and hearing and paying close attention to the voice of Jesus, in the presence of Jesus, it is those people who must dig the foundation. If you haven't come close to Jesus and known his love, if you haven't stayed close to him to hear his word from his lips, through his scriptures as he breathes them in their life to us, in prayer as he speaks his word to us, then you have no business building a foundation. Very important to realize this. Otherwise, it seems very hard. That an opening question, why do you come to me and don't do what I say? And we can get immediately into a frame of guilt and think, I'm not doing enough. I'm not building a foundation. I'm failing. I'm not doing the things that Jesus told me. I am racked with guilt. I'm filled with my failure. And so Jesus reminds us here that the people who build the foundation are those who've come close and who are near him, and who have heard his word and understood it. They are the ones who will build a foundation. Well, before we look at each of these steps a little more, let's talk about the foundation and what it enables us to achieve. You know, stability in a house is a good thing. And as we learned when we were looking for a house in Dunedin, then we went to St. Kilda. Now, St. Kilda is down right by the coast, and it's quite a desirable area, actually. But many of the houses are built, in effect, on sand, right? And I remember this one house we went to, and it had been done up beautifully. I mean, it had a lovely new kitchen, and it had all the floorboards had been beautifully worked so that they were back to their pristine condition. The spaces were great, right? The outside, the indoor-outdoor flow, all of it was great. But you had the oddest experience walking on it, that you were walking downhill in the living room. And we realized, you know, this was one of the nicer houses we looked at, actually. It just didn't have a foundation at all. See? It had sunk into the sand. So you realize the importance. The thing is, you don't necessarily see this from the outside unless you've got the eyes for it, right? If you're a buildery type. And you don't necessarily see it from the furnishings and the way it's appointed inside. But when you start to walk around it, and the oddest thing, you know, you feel suddenly very insecure, this lavishly appointed house, but you feel like you're not standing on solid ground anymore. It's going to cave in. Foundation really matters in a house, but you can't necessarily see it. And that's the first thing. Two houses may look identical from the outside. They may look identical in the inside, but underneath is what really matters. And when does it matter? Jesus says, when the torrent came, when the storm comes. Pessimists, optimists, lay down your swords. The jury is in. There is a storm coming. And Jesus was speaking to those who knew all about storms. They knew about storms on the Galilee, sudden storms that come. And they knew because they lived very hard lives. Although they, just like us, were searching for security, searching for freedom, their lives were very hard. They knew about the storms that could come. And for us, Jesus is saying, there will be storms. The life of discipleship does not make you immune from storms. And LifePoint, we know this well, right? We are real about our discipleship. We know that storms come. But let's be reminded of those storms. The storms of sudden accident. The storms of prolonged ill health. The storms of financial insecurity, of redundancy, the storms of bereavement, the storms of relationship failure. These storms can come on suddenly, or you can see them coming, growing in front of you until they engulf you. Those storms are inevitable. There's another storm, though, too. And that's the storm of the judgment of Jesus. You don't get this in Luke, but boy, you do get this in Matthew. And I'd be remiss not to remind us of it. That one day we all stand before Jesus. And the point there, Jesus says, is, hey, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say? And there they say, look, we prophesied, and we did exorcisms, and we did this and that. And he says, depart from me. I never knew you. And that storm is a storm, again, that the Jews knew about. They knew, they understood that there would come a reckoning. There would come a time when they stood before the judgment seat of God, and a storm would come. Would their house stand? So be assured, be in no doubt, that however you build security into your life, storms will come. And many of us, so good that we were praying this morning for God's consolation in the midst of trials, because many of us know those storms very well. And Jesus is making the point here that you are building in your life by coming to him, by hearing his words, by doing what he says. You are building a house that will weather the storm. It's a great metaphor for us. For those of us who have great houses, maybe mortgage-free, it's a reminder that the real house is the one that you are building in your discipleship with Jesus. And that the storms that come will come upon that house and be weathered by that house, not by the one in which you live and exult. Larnach had a very solid house and a very modern house, but when the storms came, he fell apart inside. And for those of us who are living in a wigwam, an igloo, a yurt, in a sleeping bag on the ground under the stars, or who God might call to do those very things, it's a great consoling metaphor because we're building a house. If you do what Jesus tells you, having come close to him and heard his voice, you are building a house that will weather the storms of life. And it will weather the great storm to come when we all stand before Jesus. And he says, so. Great consolation to us. So the storm will come. And the difference between the houses that we build lies in the foundation. Unseen, perhaps, by others. But it's what matters in the moment of the storm. Because this is the end of Jesus' sermon, he's offering a summary in many ways of how we are to respond to him. I think back over the years and I remember those, particularly in the charismatic renewal as I knew it in the 80s, who loved to come to Jesus. And for them, the experience of being in the presence of Jesus, being intimate with Jesus, was the key to the house that they were building. Anywhere they could go to get a taste of that intimacy, to drink from the well of the presence, that was where they'd go. And it is true that to hang with those people was to sense a liveliness and a sense of being loved and a warmth that looked very much like a great house, a house that you want to visit, a house that you want to live in. But I think of some, not all, but I think of some of those for whom that really was the house. That was what mattered. And when the storms came later in life and the intimacy was hard to find, the whole thing fell apart. And then I think of those who came to Jesus in order to hear his words. And now I'm thinking of some time at university in TSCF groups. We love to hunt for the truth, to debate the scriptures, to read and feed upon the words and the truth of Jesus. And you could sense great houses being built, spacious and airy and solid, filled with consoling truth. You know the shape of the world as you read the scriptures, and you must. and as you talk together, you know what the world is like and you know your place in it. And it feels like a very solid house. But it wasn't enough for some that I think of as I look back. Oh, this last week. They had access to the truth and they loved the truth. But there was no foundation. It was in the head. And a house that is just about the heart warmed by the presence of Jesus. Or a house that is just about a head filled with the truth of Jesus, or whatever truths we glean from our favorite authors, is not enough. It will build a house that will look impressive to others, and it may be beautifully appointed and furnished, but it will not have a foundation. And the foundation is built by one thing only. It is by doing what Jesus tells us. So we come to Jesus and we hear his voice in order that we may do whatever he tells us. What will this mean for you? You know, all of us, I suspect, have things in our lives, areas in our lives, where we are not doing what the Lord is telling us to do. All of us have that. And so the growth step for you today is simply to turn toward that thing and say, Lord, I'll do it. I'll build the foundation. I will do what you tell me. When you do that thing that God has laid in front of you, you are stepping out in faith. You are crossing the road. You are building a foundation. You are making sure and certain your faith. Because your faith will be proved when you step out in obedience, risky as that may seem, to whatever God has told you, and he comes through for you and he delivers. That's how faith is built. That's how foundations are made. And if today you are staying in the realm of experience, just wanting to marinate in the presence of God, or you are staying in the realm of truth, wanting to feed and learn more, consider what it is from all of that that God is saying to you that you must do, and do it. Really, the life of discipleship is a very easy one. I mean, in one sense, there's lots of disciplines that we have to put into place and lots of things that we have to do. After all, we're building a house, and that's complicated. But in another sense, Jesus is saying, it's not hard. You come to me, you hear me, you know me as Lord, and therefore you do what you're told. And I believe very firmly that for those who want to go that path, the way will be made clear. If you really, really want to hear what Jesus wants to tell you, you will. He will make it clear to you. Now, it may take some soul searching. It may take conversations, challenging conversations with people. It may take digging into Scripture, but he will tell you. And if you're in the midst of confusion, know this, Jesus will not leave you there forever. He wants you to know his purpose and his will. Very simple. But because Jesus is speaking about houses, and because houses are so much part of the New Zealand thing, houses that are physical and built on land, houses that are built on careers, houses that are built on relationships, houses that are built on the kingdoms of this world. There is, for those who come to Jesus, a renunciation that we must do. We're going to have communion shortly, and I don't want us to come straight up to the table. Instead, I want us to spend some time in renunciation first. Gina's going to come and we'll sing, Create in Me a Clean Heart. And I want you to do some time before the Lord, as I will, saying, Lord, what is the house that I have been building that will not stand? What do we need to take down? Where is the foundation, Lord, that I have not been laying? And where we have been building a house other than what the Lord designs for us, that it may stand in the storm, we lay that house down. We tear it down. We repent of it. And having done that, we will come forward and we will receive a new foundation in the cross of Jesus Christ. And with it, the grace to build in faith the house that he has prepared for us in our lives, and the foundation that will stand in this storm and in the storm of the next life.